Oh, that was the main commentary that were there. Others were Mayavadi commentaries in your Gita Press book. So Prabhupada didn't refer to them. And the subsequent cantos, Prabhupada extensively quotes Chakravarti Pad, sometimes Sridhar Swami, and Jiva Goswami. So in the subsequent cantos, he rarely quotes Madhvacharya. He quotes Madhvacharya only when Jiva Goswami has quoted Madhvacharya. So, certainly Prabhupada said that my qualification is, I have repeated as it is. But still, as it is has to be carefully understood. Because when Vishwanatha Thakur was writing, there was no Darwin's theory of evolution at that time. So when Prabhupada is speaking about Darwin's theory of evolution, what does it mean? Is he repeating as it is? That means he is taking up the message of God, which has come down in Parampara, but he is presenting it in context. So, as compared to the previous Acharyas, there are three things which Prabhupada emphasizes much more than the previous Acharyas. Much more. The first is sex and women. Previous Acharyas don't talk about it so much. When Prabhupada went to the West, you know, in America, having sex is like eating a meal. It's so casual. There's no thought about it. It's like you just take a meal, like that people used to have sex. And even now they have sex. It's a very casual thing. That's why Prabhupada had to strike, hammer it heavily again and again. The dangers of associating with women, how sex is an obstacle on the spiritual path. So sex and women is one thing. Second thing is, identifying a spiritual master. Because by the time Prabhupada went, becoming a guru had become a very big business, a very profitable business. Prabhupada said, the gurus, Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book introduction, the gods manufactured in the mystic factory of India. The mystic factory of India. Then Prabhupada had to write a lot. Who is a bona fide guru? Who is not a bona fide guru? So the emphasis on the parampara that Prabhupada gives, previous acharyas don't talk about it so much because it is not required. And the third thing Prabhupada heavily condemns is impersonalism. Impersonalism. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur also would do that. But Prabhupada brings it into purports where impersonalism is not even being addressed. Prabhupada brings it in and smashes it. So, because impersonalism was pervasive. In fact, for a devotee, or rather for Prabhupada, the main obstacle to devotion was two things. One was sense gratification, the other was impersonalism. That's why in his purport only, in his pranam mantra only, there is Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarini. So Paschatya means it's materialistic, first of all. That is implied. And on top of materialism, if you want to escape from that, there is materialism and monism. So monism means impersonalism. Ism means some school of thought. Mono means one. So monism means that school of thought which says there is only one substance. Now technically speaking, there are two forms of monism. There is materialistic monism and there is spiritualistic monism. That means monism which says everything is just matter. Everything is matter, so they are also monists. So in that sense, atheistic scientists are also monists. Because they say everything is matter. There is only one matter, one substance existing, and that is matter. The Prabhupada does not use the word monists in that sense. He calls them as materialists. And Prabhupada uses the word monists in the sense which Shankaracharya uses this. Brahma Satya Jagan Mithya. Only one substance existing and that is Brahman. So, the main obstacle Prabhupada faced in his preaching in India as well as in the West was impersonalism, apart from materialism. And that's why, so, sex and women is talked about where Prabhupada is talking about sex and women is to counter materialism. Prabhupada is talking about impersonalism and the qualification of the spiritual master is to refute impersonalism. Or Mayavad. Therefore, we see Prabhupada actually gives commentaries according to what is best, most required for the time, place, circumstance. Now, let's look at it, as I said, from a historical perspective. How do you move? So now, Upanishads are a stepping stone in the Vedic master plan. Stepping stone means what? Actually, the Vedas have a master plan. That master plan is to gradually elevate the conditioned souls. Do you have a marker and pen also? Maybe you can switch this off then. That's okay, you can be there one day. So, the positive axis is spiritual. The positive axis is spiritual, the negative axis is material. So now, the conditioned souls in the material world are the material realm. So then, for them, there are the Vedas which talk about karma kanda. So, at the bottom of this axis are the irreligious materialists, impious materialists. At the top of this are pious materialists. So what the Vedas do is, so those who are impious materialists, that means they want sense gratification, but they are ready to do anything sinful to get sense gratification. So you can switch this off if possible. You know, there's no need for the radiation to go in. Yeah, you can switch. No need for the radiation to go into the eyes, no? Or you can't turn it on afterwards again? It's difficult, yeah? Okay, then. Okay, let it be then. No problem. They put some paper on it otherwise. That's better. So, we have the impious materialists. That means they want sense gratification, they are ready to do anything and everything for that. And then there are the pious materialists. They want sense gratification, but they will follow the laws of God. They will do yajna. If you want a child, you do yajna. If you want a beautiful wife, do some sort of puja. So, this is pious materialists. So, what the Vedas do is, the Vedas basically bring people from impiety to piety. And that's why in the Vedas, Indra is glorified enormously. Why? Because Indra is like the epitome of sense gratification. Because materialistic people want sense gratification. And the hero for them is Indra. So that's why if you look at the Vedas themselves, Rig Veda, Sam Veda, Athar Veda, Yajur Veda, there Vishnu is not mentioned so frequently. And Indra is glorified much more, along with the other devatas. Well, there are these four Dikpalas, Indra, Yamaraj, Kuver and Varuna. Dikpalas means the protectors of the four directions. So they are glorified in the Vedas. Now, after talking about how one can have sense gratification by going to the Vedas and enjoying life, then after that, the Vedic scriptures give a next phase. The next phase is called the Upasana Kanda. Sorry. Next phase is the Jnana Kanda. And the Jnana Kanda basically contains the Upanishads. So, Prabhupada talks about this elaborately in his purports. Especially in 2.42-43 in the Bhagavad Gita purport, he says, the Upanishads mark the beginning of transcendental life. The Upanishads mark the beginning of transcendental life. What does that mean? In the Vedas, there's no transcendence there. It is there, but it's very hidden. It's only materialism, but religious materialism, guided materialism, regulated materialism. But the Upanishads start telling, what is the use of going to heaven? It's also temporary. What is the use of sense gratification? It can never last. All these material desires are caused by the forms which are there in this world. Don't be attracted to the forms. For all the forms are illusory. The Upanishads contain negation. Negation and rejection. Rejection of what? Everything material. Now it's all illusory. It's all temporary. It's all a cause of bondage. Give it up. And the Upanishads start hinting. They start hinting about something spiritual. ईशोपनिषद इट सेज कल्याण तमम तत्ते रूपम पश्यामि. ईशोपनिषद सेज कल्याण तमम द मोस्ट ऑस्पिशियस रूपम द फॉर्म तत्ते पश्यामि, लेट मी सी इट. सो लाइक दैट देयर इज अ हिंट अबाउट द फॉर्म ऑफ गॉड, बट देयर इज नॉट मच इलैबोरेट डिस्क्रिप्शन ऑफ दैट फॉर्म. सो दैट्स व्हाई आई स्टार्टेड उपनिषद स्टार्ट फ्रॉम द नेगेटिव एक्सिस एंड जस्ट गो स्लाइटली टुवर्ड्स द पॉजिटिव एक्सिस. And then above this, we have the Bhagavat Purana. In fact, if you look at the Puranas per se, the Puranas give everything. The Puranas talk about Karma Kanda also, and the Puranas talk about Bhakti also. But Bhagavat Purana talks, well, it doesn't talk much about Karma Kanda. It talks mainly about Bhakti. That's why it is called Amala Purana. So, the idea is that you want sense gratification, scriptures provide sense gratification. But then gradually you realize sense gratification doesn't make you happy. Oh, then become detached from that. That upanishads are there. But then even impersonal will satisfy the heart. Therefore there is something higher. And there is bhakti. So it's a gradual progression. So upanishads are a stepping stone in the master plan of the Vedic literature. So that master plan begins with the four Vedas. Then the second step is the upanishads. And the final step is the Puranas. The Bhagavad Purana especially is the culmination which gives the highest revelation. So, do the Upanishads talk about impersonalism? Yes. But they talk about impersonalism not as a conclusive truth, as an intermediate truth. Intermediate. That means, just like we have the simple example we always give in our Discover Yourself course, that 2 minus 5 is not possible. That is not a conclusive truth. That is an intermediate truth. At that level, that's what can be understood. So therefore, that's what is taught. So the Upanishads, even if they say some places God does not have a form, so Jiva Goswami in the Shat Sandarbhas quotes a rule from the Mimamsa. He says that actually if there is a statement in the beginning of a book and there is a later statement in the book, and if the later statement seems to contradict the earlier statement, then the later statement has to be given more authority, because that is where the conclusion of the book is coming. So like Bhagavad Gita may talk about different paths, but at the end Krishna says sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. So this is the final statement, this is the conclusion, and this has the highest authority. In fact, in this statement Krishna is not just giving a different statement, it's not just contradict is something which he has taught earlier. It is rejecting everything that he has taught earlier. Isn't it? So, the Upanishads often in the beginning, they talk about something which seems like impersonalism. The forms are illusory, this, that. But later on, they do hint about the form of God. So, impersonalism is an intermediate truth. It is not a conclusive truth. Is this point clear? Any questions till now? So, to look at this another way, we know the Vedic literature talk about karma and jnana, isn't it? Or the mind has two tendencies, sankalpa and vikalpa. Sankalpa means to accept, vikalpa means to reject. So, the karma kanda section of the literature is associated with sankalpa. I want this, I want this, I want this, how can I get it? The Upanishads are associated with vikalpa. I don't want this. This material world is miserable. All the desires lead to suffering. Therefore, I reject it. But neither sankalpa nor vikalpa is a steady stage for the mind. It's not a steady state. Why? Because both are based on selfishness. This gives me pleasure. This gives me misery. So I want it. This gives me misery. So I reject it. But beyond it, the Bhagavatam talks about seva. That is our dharma. Jivara sarupoye Krishnera Nitya Das. So both of these in that sense are metastable. Temporary stability is there. A Brahma Bhuna Loka Punaravartino Arjuna. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Even if you means both Karma Kand and Jnana Kand, they are teaching some things, but they are metastable. They are not conclusive. They are intermediate. They are progressive onwards to the final truth. So now, moving forward from here, The Upanishads are a stepping stone in the Vedic master plan. You can open it. You need to rub this. Where's the marker still? Okay, I'll rub it. So if you have any questions, please feel free to ask in between also. Or you can note it down, then we can discuss at the end, whichever way. Yeah, tell me.
The commentaries which Prabhupada referred, you told till 5th canto is Vishwanath Chakravarti, Jiva Goswami, Madhavacharya.
Till 4th canto. 4th canto it was primarily Jiva and Madhava. And from the 4th canto onwards, it was Vishwanath, Jiva and Sridhar.
Can you also
go to see it? Yeah. See, it's like that they are the main people who have published it.
Okay, same commentary.
They have very few, Gita Press has very few original writers. They basically, like the, Prabhupada said, they became wealthy by just by selling Bhagavad Gita and selling Ramcharitmanas. And neither of them are written by them. But they made them available at an economical rate and are widely distributed. And some, and you know, the Bhagavatam is commented by many acharyas. So some of those scholars are impersonalist. So Prabhupada, so that all the commentaries are available in one book. So Prabhupada did not refer to the other commentaries. So the Nag Press which published the, I think it was Nag Press, which published the first four cantos. And for the towards the last part of the fourth canto, Prabhupada used the Gita Press one. Now he used it for only one canto. And then afterwards he used the Gaudiya Math publication. So, but essentially it's not that he was referring to their commentary, their, what they have written. Because they have only published what previous acharyas have written.
Okay. He was an English, he had done a master's in English,
right?
MSc English. So English language was very...
Like, no, Prabhupada learned Sanskrit, from what I know, he learned it in school. He learned it at home. And he also learned it later while reading his spiritual master's books. But in one sense, Sanskrit language was not so unfamiliar or difficult at that time. This is a part of the culture at that time. So Prabhupada in his college, he did graduation in philosophy, economics and English. Along with compulsory Bible classes there. Because it was Scottish Church College. So all that Prabhupada refutes about Christianity is what Professor Arkhard taught him. No? So Prabhupada catches that and refutes that. So now, where impersonalists are right and where they go wrong. So they are right in the sense that material desires lead to suffering. And material desires are caused by material forms. So you see this cycle over here? Nobody wants to suffer. Material miseries are there. Now how do material miseries come? Because of material desires. And what causes material desires? It is material forms and material varieties. So therefore, their idea is that all form and variety is a cause of bondage and therefore it should be given up. It should be rejected as illusory. For example, now, material form, when we try to practice spiritual life, the form of the opposite sex is a big obstacle. It's material form. But does that mean that if somebody gets married and becomes a grihastha, they'll be satisfied? No, because there is material variety. After we enjoy one form, the mind is not satisfied with that one form. In Kali Yuga, even to be a grihastha is a great challenge. Because the forms have their varieties. And the conditioned soul thinks that that actually this form doesn't give me pleasure, but another form will give me pleasure. So the attraction, the husband may not have a great attraction to his wife. But that doesn't mean he has lost sex desire. So the two are different things. Sex desire is very much there. But because that form has been enjoyed, so that form doesn't have any so much attraction to it. So material forms and material varieties are the cause of material desires. And material desires lead to material sufferings. So therefore, they say that if you want to uproot material desires, we have to understand the truth. We have to uproot the misconception. They consider it misconception. That these forms and varieties are real. And you have to reject these forms and varieties. So now, in this, even we agree with them. Prabhupada says in Second Chance that as far as the necessity of giving up sense gratification for spiritual advancement is concerned, the Vaishnavites, the Shankarites, and the Buddhists have no disagreement. All of them agree that we have to give up sense gratification if we want to make spiritual advancement. So even Buddha, he also said that Asha hi paramam dukkham, nirasha paramam sukham. Asha is the cause of suffering. You give up Asha, then you will become happy. So in that sense, the impersonalists are right. That they are right that material forms and varieties cause suffering by inducing material desires. But they are wrong in thinking that all forms and varieties are illusory. The forms and varieties that we observe are surely illusory. They don't last. But that doesn't mean that all forms and varieties are illusory. Why? Let's see, all of you have read Prabhupada's books. So what are the standard refutations that Prabhupada gives for impersonalism? So you become a devotee, I'll become an impersonalist. So you give the argument which Prabhupada gives and I will present the Mayavadi perspective and then you try to refute it. Okay? So, God is impersonal. How do you refute it? What is the standard argument? That your argument is based on Maya. Because you don't have a form. So your father also doesn't have a form. Your form is illusory. Your father's form is illusory. No, it is illusory. No, that is your understanding. You say that the idea is that I am a person, you are a person, my father is a person. Therefore, why should the father of all fathers not be a person? But I say you are not a person only. You are arguing you are a person because you are an illusion. So, your first step in mathematics is wrong. That's why everything else is wrong after that. All of you know the answer to this. But you just are not able to place it in context. Okay. So, how do you refute this? Yeah? No. Wherever there is life, there is form. Life brings form to matter. That's fine. But that doesn't prove that the soul has a form. No. So how are the two connected? Matter doesn't have a form, that is fine. But how does that matter having or not having a form prove that spirit has a form? Yeah, spirit can give form, but spirit doesn't have to have form itself.
Spirit doesn't have a form because matter is there, the body is there. Body is made up of the spirit as well as matter.
Correct.
If matter is not having form, is
no, but matter can be given form. Matter can be given form. Now this table, it doesn't have any spirit in it. It has form. So that's what I'm saying. So what spirit gives is life. Spirit does not give form. Yeah, no. Spirit can give form means that matter has the ability to be formless or having form. Yeah. And that is imparted by spirit, but that does not prove that spirit has form. No, matter has the attribute of being formless or having form.
Yeah, but the ability is given by the spirit.
No, that is inherent. It is inherent.
No, it's not inherent.
Okay, if it's not inherent, unless there is groundnut. Groundnut has the inherent ability to produce oil. Unless there is some oil. It's not that. Can spirit produce oil out of stone? No. So the ability to produce oil has to be inherent in the substance. Only then can spirit produce it.
Spirit impregnate that ability in that matter.
No. So can spirit impregnate stone to produce oil? No. See? Okay. Let's go one at a time. Wait. See, you are saying that spirit gives form to matter. I am saying that matter has to have the inherent potential to have form. Otherwise, spirit is useless. And I am giving the example of inherent potential. And in oil, the inherent potential to in groundnut, the inherent potential to produce oil is there. And when a spirit processes it, the oil comes out. But in stone, there is no inherent potential to produce oil. Therefore, no matter how much you process a stone, you cannot produce oil. So the oil is not produced by the spirit. The oil is produced by the inherent potential there. The spirit is only the agent which brings the potential out. So, okay, last argument. Want to say something? Yeah. Agreed. So nobody is disagreeing with that. So, yeah. So all, I agreed with you. No, spirit gives life. Spirit gives life. Spirit does not give form. Correct.
Spirit can give form. Spirit can grow the body just because
correct.
It has the power.
Correct.
Spirit gives the life and okay. Life
gives
the form.
No, but that doesn't prove that spirit has form. That doesn't prove that spirit has form. All that it proves is that matter has the potential to assume form.
Spirit is making the form to grow.
Correct. So that no, the potential has to be there in matter. Otherwise matter cannot assume form. Spirit is what brings out the potential within matter to have form. It is not the spirit is giving its own form to matter. It is that matter has its own potential to produce form. No, spirit doesn't have. Then why can't spirit make a dead stone alive? Spirit can give life only to certain matter, not to all matter. So the potential has to be in matter, not in spirit. Stones are living entities. Which are, where are they in 8.4 million species? Where are they 8.4 million species? Are they aquatics? Are they birds? Are they beasts? Are they human beings? Oh, they are different. They are different. Okay, let's stop this debate now. Because we may have too many questions and no answers. So let's start one by one. So, first argument is that we are not persons only. That is the argument. Now, okay. So I said all of you know the answer to this. Somebody says we are not persons. Then at least we think we are persons. Isn't it? Now where does this illusion come from? Even the illusion that I am a person has to come from somewhere. If Brahman is the only reality, then see Mayavadis cannot answer two questions. In any Mayavadi you go to, these two questions are fatal for Mayavad. What is it? Where does Maya come from and how does Maya overpower Brahman? If Brahman is the only reality, then where does Maya come from? So, if I am having a sense of personality right now, all of us have a sense of individuality and personality right now. Even if for argument's sake we agree that it is that feeling is an illusion. But where does the illusion come from? Because when Brahman is there, there is nothing except Brahman existing. So, our acharyas give the example that if you mistake a rope for a snake, then, yes, we agree that the rope is not a snake. But that means there has to be some snake existing somewhere to give us the misconception that the rope is a snake. So even if I agree that my current sense of personality is false, but still I have a sense of personality, where is the sense of personality coming from? It has to come from somewhere. Therefore, now, if God does not have form, if God does not have personality, then illusion has something which reality does not have. The world has something which the creator does not have. And therefore, the creator becomes lesser than the world. And therefore, that is an error in judgment. Because the creator has to be greater than the created, not lesser than the created. Therefore, God is a person. Why? Because our sense of personality comes from God. Janma adhyasyataha is the source of everything. Sarva karana karanam. So, we have a sense of. So, Prabhupada's argument is perfectly valid, but we have to go deeper into it. The Mayavadis try to torpedo it, we have to go deeper and defend it. This is the first point. That our sense, we have a sense of personality because there is an original personality. All of you know that example of Urdhva Moolamadha Shakham 15.1. That the upside down tree. Now, that refers to a reflection, a tree reflected in a river. So, these two fundamental misconceptions, monism and materialism. Materialism says, oh, this tree itself is a reality. Just jump in and catch the mango and eat it. If you don't find it, try again. Try, but never cry. That is materialistic philosophy. Just keep searching. So they say that the reflection is the only reality. And the impersonal say, the reflection is not the reality and there is no reality only. They say the reflected tree is wrong, but there is no actual tree at all. So these are two misconceptions, materialism and monism. So Vaishnavism gives a clear understanding. This is a reflection and there is a reality. So now that the first argument is that even if there is a reflection and we agree that the reflection is false, but the reflection cannot come by itself. There has to be some source for the reflection. Okay. So now another favorite argument of the Mayavadis is that if you say God has a form, God will become limited. Why do you foolish people limit God? God is unlimited. But because your brains are limited, so you make God also limited. Don't limit God by making him a form, by making him have a form and making him a person. God is infinite. God is unlimited. Don't limit him. How will you answer this? Yes?
When you say God is unlimited, then he can be having form also.
Form makes him limited. No. You are here, you are not elsewhere.
God has both. If you say God is not having one thing, means God is limited there only. If you say God doesn't have form, means he is limited. Because he is not having something. He should have both things. There only is unlimited.
No, but if you say God has form, that also limits him. Good logic. So you have to complete the logic. But you have not answered my question. I agree with your point. If I say that God doesn't have a form, that limits him. But you have not answered. If God has a form, that limits him also. How can form be unlimited? Form means you have a shape. And shape limits. Yeah? It's not a material form. Explain that. Okay. A simple way to refute this is that, okay, we agree. Form causes limitation. So now let us destroy form. This room has a form. Let's put a bomb here, explode it. It will become a formless heap. Is the formless heap limited or unlimited? Limited. So, just by making something formless, we don't make it unlimited. So, what causes limitation is not form or lack of form. Because if you see this room, it has form, it's limited. You destroy the form, the formless heap is also limited. So, what causes limitation is not the presence of form or the absence of form. What causes limitation is matter. Matter by nature is limited. Whether matter is with form, it is limited. Whether matter is without form, it is limited. So, the mistake that the Mayavadis make is, where they go wrong is, actually they accuse the personalists of saying, you are dragging material forms on God. You have a material form, so you think that God also has a form. Like that. But actually, they are dragging their material conceptions on the spiritual realm. They are dragging. What is the material conception? That matter limits, that form limits. But it's not form that limits, it's matter that limits. And matter limits when there is form, matter limits when there is no form. Both cases. So, if we want to understand how God is limited, unlimited, the first thing that we have to understand is God is not material. God is not material. And then when we come to the spiritual realm, in the spiritual realm we understand that because spirit is different from matter, spirit can have a form and still be all pervasive. How is that? As Bhagwan, he is situated in one place. As Paramatma, he is situated everywhere. As Brahma Jyoti, he is spread everywhere. So, God is unlimited not because he has form or because he doesn't have form. God is unlimited because he is spiritual. So form doesn't limit, matter limits. And spirit has the potential to be unlimited. Now going, yes? Okay, that's why I said, spirit has the potential to be unlimited. It's not that all spirit is unlimited. That's why there is, what is it, Vibhinnamsha and Swamsha. It's Anuatma and Vibhuatma. So God is special spirit. Just like in the spiritual world, now everything is conscious. Now does that mean that the floor in the spiritual world is also Jivatma? If you say the floor is the Jivatma, then is the whole floor one Jivatma or every atom in the floor is one Jivatma? And does that mean that the swarup of everybody is to, there are souls whose swarup is to be a floor? There are souls whose swarup is to be a table? There are souls whose swarup is to be a glass? No. There are five rasas. And Shantarasa is for trees. So there is a chit substance. Chit substance, which is Satchitananda, that is our substance. So that makes the, that constitutes the spiritual world. So they are not considered to be souls. That is a spiritual substance. Just like we have material substance, that is spiritual substance. So it is also conscious, but it's not a Jivatma.
Spiritual substance is made up of Satchitananda.
Yeah.
It has a form.
It can have. Everything in the spiritual world is conscious. So, when the cloud in Vrindavan, the sun becomes hot, then the cloud sees, oh, Krishna is getting heated. Krishna is feeling hot, and the cloud comes along, and the cloud acts as an umbrella. When the cloud acts as an umbrella, the sun gets angry, I am not getting the darshan of Krishna. Sun becomes hotter, and he melts the cloud. And then the rains come, and then the rains are also Krishna. Okay. The sun thinks, I wanted to have darshan, but now I have caused rains. The rains have drenched Krishna. Then he becomes hotter. And he dries up the rains also. And then another cloud comes along. And, Krishna is becoming hot. I have to block it. So that's how everybody is engaged in service of Krishna in the spiritual world. So now there is chit padartha, chit shakti, he says. So the point which I was making is that there is spiritual substance which constitute the spiritual world. And that spiritual mass substance also manifests as Jivatma and also manifests as Vibhuatma. The soul can be manifesting in multiple forms if Krishna wants him to. Just like if Krishna performs the pastime of Vrindavan. So now it's happening in different places in different material universes. When Krishna also some of the associates, at least his intimate associates, they expand to that many forms. The other associates may be different. There are sadhana siddha jivas or different kinds of jivas are there. So, and the principle here is that the soul is not unlimited. So, now, as I said, spirit has the potential to be unlimited. How is that possible? So, when that chit padartha is actually, when Krishna is manifesting himself, then Krishna is unlimited. But a jivatma is limited. That's why we have anoranya mahato mahiya. So, yes.
He is telling that holy spiritual world is made with chit shakti.
Yeah.
Chit shakti substance.
Correct.
It is having all the localities of what is there in the spirit soul.
Correct.
It is also made up of Satchitananda.
It is Satchitananda. Correct.
But it is not a...
It's not like an individual soul. It's just substance.
Only substance?
Consciousness is there. The spiritual world, you know, we cannot do too much analysis. Because then they get hundreds of questions. So we have to understand that what is why? Because when we are in the realm of time, we cannot understand the realm of timelessness. Some things we understand. So, you know, Krishna is always 16 years old in the spiritual world. Now, how the mother Yashoda reciprocated love with him? Actually, it's described that the Kaishore Roop is the original Roop of Krishna. And the Kaishore Roop contains his Kumara Roop and Paukanda Roop. So, the Kishore Krishna is the original form, but the Kishore Krishna, when he is reciprocating with Yashodamai, from the Kishore Rupa, the Kumara Rupa manifests. And that's how Mother Yashoda is able to offer her breast milk to Krishna. Now, the gopis never see this pastime. Because for them, they always see Krishna as Kishore. And it will be a complete rasabhas to have Krishna as a baby drinking milk. So, that's how it is. So some things we understand because the acharyas have revealed to us. But there are many things which you cannot understand about the spiritual world because what is beyond the realm of time is difficult to understand when we are within the realm of time. Yeah?
This soul is made of Satchitananda. Everything is there made of soul in Satchitananda. What difference is soul and this?
Yeah, there is individuality.
To go beyond the time,
okay, let me come to this question. Yeah. soul has?
There
is consciousness. This conscious awareness is there. But it's chit padartha. See, individuality means I am here, you are here. But it's not that the floor is thinking, oh, I am the floor, that is the roof, and this and that. There's no sense of, there's consciousness, but there's no sense of individuality there. There's nothing unconscious in the spiritual world. Everything is conscious. Now, there can be consciousness, just like Brahma Jyoti. Brahma Jyoti, why do we say it's impersonal? Because it's Sachidananda. Brahma Jyoti is not Asata Chit Nirananda like matter. Brahma Jyoti is Sachidananda. But the problem is that there is no reciprocation over there. No reciprocation over there. So it's a little difficult for us to understand at this age. It's like it's a spulinga. Spulinga means sparks of fire. So sparks of fire also having the component of fire in them. But the sparks are of, some of the sparks are souls, some of the sparks are not souls. So what is the exact difference? That we cannot understand. Okay, but there are five rasas in which we reciprocate in the spiritual realm. We'll move ahead now. Let us address the questions which I raised earlier. Then I'll take some other questions which you have raised. Because I don't want this class to end with more doubts for you than resolution of doubts. So, the third point I raised was that does matter have form or does spirit give form to matter? So, is matter formless or is matter having form? When you talk about matter, we have to talk about earth, water, fire, air, ether. These are the basic building blocks of matter. Now, do they have form? Does water have form? No. Water assumes the form of the container which you put. Does air have form? No. Now, does earth have form? Well, earth can be given form. Earth can be given form. But again, that form does not stay by itself. Now, for example, you build a house, we live it for 100 years, the form of the house will start deteriorating and getting destroyed. So, now, is matter inherently formless? Yes. Inherently formless in the sense that matter's form starts, even if matter has a form temporarily, if we leave it to itself, that form starts degenerating and deteriorating and getting destroyed. So now I was making the point, see, generally what impersonalists do is, they try to distract from the real issue by raising irrelevant issues. So, you are making a very valid point, that does matter have form or does matter not have form? So matter inherently is formless. Now I was making the irrelevant point that matter has to have the potential to produce form. Why is that irrelevant? Because that doesn't prove anything. Yes, I agree matter has to have the potential to produce form. But that doesn't prove matter itself originally has form. Matter originally, if you leave it to itself, it's formless. But it has the potential to be organized into form. Now, can that form be organized itself? No, it cannot be organized itself. That requires some external organizer. Now, does this itself prove that spirit has form? It proves by inference. How by inference? See, there is spirit and there is matter. Now, matter inherently is, it goes towards form, being formless. Now, we cannot say whether spirit has form or not just by spirit's ability to give form. But there has to be something which has form. As I said, if even the soul is thinking that I can give form to this matter, then that means the soul must be having some experience of true form. And where is that true form? If matter doesn't have true form, then there are only two ontological realities. Ontological means about existence. There are only two realities existing, material and spiritual. If matter does not have an inherent form, then spirit must have an inherent form. Otherwise, where will the form come from? Where even the conception of form come from, even in the actual form, where even the conception of form come from? So therefore, we understand, even if we agree for argument, say that soul doesn't have a form, at least the absolute truth has to have a form. Somewhere in spiritual realm, form has to be present. And if we are parts of the absolute truth, if God has a form, then we also have to have a form. So, this is a little convoluted argument, and most of the time you will not have to face it. But if you face it, we can be prepared. So how it works is, generally when Vedic culture was like an intellectual war, Jnana Yuddha. So how it is that, you know, a foot soldier is trained to fight with a foot soldier. A horseback warrior, a cavalry, is trained to fight with the cavalry. A chariot warrior is trained to fight with the chariot warrior. An elephant warrior is trained to fight with the elephant warrior. So, you know, if we try to confront a hardcore Mayavadi, and you know, we are like a foot soldier and he is like an elephant warrior, we will not be able to face. But that doesn't mean that cannot be faced. It can surely be faced. We have elephant warriors on our side also who can face it. But if you see, most of the people in Kali Yuga, they are not Mayavadis, they are under Mayavad influence. They are two different things. They are Mayavadis and under Mayavad influence. Whether they have heard some word jugglery, and therefore they are actually just like foot soldiers. So the basic arguments we have, they are enough to defeat them. And if somebody comes up with more advanced arguments, then we present more advanced arguments from our side. So I just gave you a glimpse. And you know, this debate goes deeper and deeper. Because what happens is, if a soul wants to believe in a particular philosophy, then Krishna gives the soul that intelligence. You want to believe that? Okay, I'll let you believe it. And he'll give him arguments, he will give him all sorts of strange ideas about how to defend it. Most of you know that story, isn't it? Once there was an anti-alcoholic campaigner, and he would go around demonstrate to people how dangerous alcohol is. So he had a live demonstration. You know, he had a bottle of wine kept in a transparent bottle, or rather a big beaker of wine, and then he would bring a mosquito in a box, and he would tell about how dangerous wine is. And he said, "Now I will demonstrate to you." So he would open the box, tuck, throw the mosquito in the wine, and the mosquito flutter, 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 and within a minute or so, it sink down dead. And then he would ask triumphantly, "So, what do you learn from this demonstration?" And everybody started looking their head down. One drunkard, he said, he was very enthusiastic, he raised his hand. "What do you learn?" He says, "When we drink wine, all the germs in our and worms in our stomach will die." So, that means, you know, if somebody wants to believe something, then that person will be given intelligence by Krishna to believe that. Although the intention of the whole experiment is entirely opposite, he comes to a radically opposite conclusion. Because that's what he wants to believe. So like that, impersonalists, if they very seriously want to believe that this is the absolute truth, they will give some arguments. And they may appear like stunning arguments to us. But there are devotees, there are acharyas also who have refuted their arguments also. That's fine. Then that's why there is debate. That's why there is debate. So now we'll come to that point. See, you can say that this is the truth. You believe this to be the truth, and that's why you are arguing this is the truth. So yes, see, Vedic culture, Jnana is like, it's like a law case. It's like a law case, you know. And there are different lawyers, and some lawyers are quoting from the law book to establish the law. And others are quoting from the law book to defy the law. Both are quoting from the same law book. No. And now, both may quote from the same law book. Like somebody may quote from a law book to get a murderer off the hook. And somebody else may quote from the law book to show how the murderer should be punished. So, now we have to, that's why there is something called a tartamya. Tartamya means hierarchy. Hierarchy, or in English they call it more technically as hermeneutics. Tartamya means that you have to have a hierarchy of scriptures. So the law has a purpose. What is the purpose? The purpose is to maintain the well-being of society. Maintain the well-being of the individual members of the society. So how is that purpose fulfilled? By punishing the wrongdoers according to the law codes. So now what is the purpose of the scripture? Let's consider Bhagavad Gita. Well, that's one scripture. Now we can understand the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita by two ways. Let's look at the philosophical school of flow of thought, and let's look at the action that happens afterwards. So philosophical flow of thought is what? Krishna is telling clearly, Sarva Dharma Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam. Mamekam Sharanam doesn't refer to merging. It refers to acting. Man mana abho mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Mam eva ishyasi satyam. You will come to me. He's not saying you will merge in me. You will come to me. So, the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita from the philosophical point of view is bhakti. It's not jnana. It's not merging. Now from the practical point of view, at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, do we see Krishna and Arjuna become one? No. They have their individuality, but they become one in desires. Arjuna says, Karishye Vachanam Tava. So Prabhupada explains in the Ishopanishad that oneness is not in existence, oneness is in desires. We become one in desires with Krishna. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chittete Karya Aikya. We become one in desires. So oneness is in desires. Oneness is not in existence. So now we can debate and we can establish that the scriptural conclusion is bhakti. So just because this lawyer is quoting verses to say that this murderer should be punished, and that lawyer is quoting the law codes to show that this murderer should not be punished, that does not mean both are on the same level. One is fulfilling the purpose of the law, the other is defying the purpose of the law. So, because there is God who is a person, so we want to believe in God as a person. There is a law, and that law, the lawyer wants to believe in that, and the lawyer wants to implement that. So, it's not that my belief is creating the reality of the what the law and justice is. There is law and justice, and this lawyer is on the side of that. So like that, the conclusion of the scripture is personalism, and naturally because we have understood, we are believing it. So now if you want to argue that this is not the conclusion, they can do that. So one of my friends, he's a big scholar in the Gita, Atmaram Prabhu. So what he has done is, he said, let us argue on your objective terms. So he has taken the philosophy of Shankaracharya, the philosophy of Ramanujacharya, and the philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, Baldev Vidya Bhushan. Because Prabhupada mostly follows Baldev Vidya Bhushan. And he compares. He says, okay, let us see what Bhagavad Gita says. What is the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita? Then let us see what is the philosophy of Shankara. Then let us see what is the philosophy of Ramanuja. And let us see what is the philosophy of Baldev. And he shows that actually the philosophy of Shankaracharya doesn't match with the philosophy of the Gita at all. Objectively, you look at the verses. So nothing matches in the Gita. And Ramanuja, it closely matches. Baldev, it accurately fits. So that way also we can analyze and establish it. And there are devotee scholars who have done that. So, now, going back to the question, spirit has form. And God has form. And because we are parts of God, we also have form. We go back to the original argument. So, now the impersonalists, they are basically impersonalism, atheism, agnosticism, apathism. Now this is a newism. What is agnosticism? What does agnosticism mean? No. That is atheism. Gnosia means to know. Agnosticism means that God cannot be known. Those who say that whether God exists or doesn't exist, we cannot know about it. So don't bother about it. So they say philosophically, the world is made in such a way that we cannot know about God. That's why Prabhupada says atheists and agnostics. He's not just repeating. They are two different categories. Atheists are those who say God doesn't exist. And agnostics are those who say that we can't know whether God exists or not. And that now is the most popular school of thought in America, it's coming to India also, it's called apathism. Apathism, I don't care whether God exists or not. I'm apathetic. I don't care. Apathism. You say, why are you fighting over whether God exists or not? And then you say, this is my God, this is your God, and you fight whose God, whether God exists. Just don't get into this whole business. This is apathism. There are different schools. Now, all these schools of thought are eternal. Because the conditioned soul wants excuses for not surrendering to Krishna. And all these schools of thought provide the conditioned soul with excuses. So now the different conditioned souls will choose different excuses. Somebody will choose agnosticism, somebody will choose atheism, somebody will choose impersonalism. But at particular times in history, when a soul who by his past good karma is materially influential, he takes up a school of thought, then that school of thought becomes prominent. So all schools of thought are always there. But in the medieval times, in the 7th, 8th century, Shankaracharya took up the school of thought of Mayavad, impersonalism. And he propagated that vigorously. And that's why it spread. So in Indian history, Shankara's hold on Indian thought was stronger than the hold of science on modern thought. Stronger. And now, as if the first thing you say is, if you say that, no, there is a God, is it scientific? That's not scientific. And the first objection people have. Isn't it? So, as soon as the God has form, but Shankara doesn't say this. It can't be right. So, that was the influence that Shankaracharya had. Enormous influence. So, now, we have two different four types of impersonalists. Which are they? Mayavadis and Brahmavadis. Correct. So, now Krishna talks about Mayavad in 9.11 and 12. And he talks about Brahmavad in 12.345. So, in 9.11-12, what is it? Avajananti maam mudha manushim tanumashrutam param bhavam ajananto bhutamaheshwaram. So, there is Jananti, Ajananti, Avajananti. Jananti means to know. Ajananti means to not know. Avajananti means to know the opposite of what is true. Not just to know, Prabhupada says, ignorance and misunderstanding about Krishna are the causes of all material tribulations. Two causes. Ignorance and misunderstanding. So the materialists are ignorant about Krishna. The impersonalists have misunderstanding about Krishna. And these two are the causes of suffering. What are the two causes? Ignorance and misunderstanding. So, they're avajananti, they understand wrong, they understand opposite of what is the reality. And what happens to them? Mogha, sha mogha karmano, mogha jnana vichetasaha, rakshasi masurim chaiva, prakritim mohinim shita. Mogha means waste. In 9.12 Krishna says, everything, their desires for success are wasted, their knowledge is wasted, mogha sha, mogha karmano, mogha jnana, their knowledge is wasted. Their work is wasted. Everything is wasted. And they take shelter of demoniac natures. You know, Rakshas is a very strong word. Rakshasim asurim chaiva. This is talking about the Mayavadis. Now in 12.345, he talks about the impersonalists who are Brahmavadis. And for them he says, Klesho diktarastesham avyakta sakta chetasam avyakta hi gatir dukkham deha vadbhir avapyate. He says that progress on this path is difficult. Why is progress on the path difficult? Because to be inactive is unnatural. To be inactive is unnatural. So Prabhupada gives a simple example for this. He says that, you know, we have something called saccharis. In schools you play saccharis. What is saccharis? Yeah, you take a sack and tie it around your legs. And then you are told to run. It's quite difficult to run, isn't it? So now, this body, for the soul, this body is like a sack, which is put not just around the legs, all around the sack. All around the soul is put. And still the soul is active. So you know, if after having a sack, a person is running, and obviously you can infer that after you remove the sack, it's not that he'll become inactive, he'll run faster. So, in spite of having this body, we are active. This body is like a big burden on soul. You remove the body, soul will not become inactive, soul will become super active. Super active. Radharani, she cooks on 50 stoves for Krishna simultaneously. She's running here, starting this, checking this, and adjusting the stuff here. 50 super active function. It's not inactive. So devotee is super active. So the point is, Krishna is saying to be inactive is unnatural for us. To be inactive is unnatural for us. And that's why to try to do something inactive is, because impersonalism requires one to be inactive. And that's why it's unnatural. That's why it's difficult. That's why avyakta hi gatir dukkham dehavad biravapyate. The gati is misery. It's like, so the only thing to do is that there is nothing to do. The only thing to talk is that there is nothing to talk. The only thing to think is that there is nothing to think. The only anand for the Mayavadis is in their name. And their anand ends with their name. That's all there is. Actually, there is no real happiness. Is there happiness? There is a happiness of relief from misery. So, Sanatana Goswami in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita says, the happiness of liberation is like the happiness of sound sleep. Very apt example. Why? Because sound sleep means there are no anxieties. Sometimes, you know, we have anxieties when we are awake and then we go to sleep and then we have bad dreams also. Then also there is great anxiety. But sound sleep means there is no anxiety. But the goal of life is not to have a sound sleep. The goal of life is to be positively active. So impersonalism is a true. It's not a complete understanding. It's klesho dhiktarastesha avyakta satvachetasam. So in a diseased condition we may want to be inactive. But that is not just like, you know, as we grow older, some of us might get arthritis. Arthritis means there is pain in the joints. So at that time, if I just move my hand like this, I cough. Every activity causes pain. That time I feel that if I just give up activity, then I will become free from pain. So, the diagnosis is correct, the prescription is wrong. The diagnosis is correct in the sense that activity is causing pain. That's correct. But what is the prescription? Give up activity. That's wrong. Why? Because the pain is not caused by activity per se. The pain is caused by disease. When there is arthritis in the body, with that arthritis when I do activity, there is pain. But when there is no arthritis in the body, then there will be no pain. So, the Mayavadis, they actually, that's why I said, their diagnosis is correct. You know, we agree with the Buddhists and the impersonalists as far as saying that material desires lead to suffering. Therefore, material forms and material desires have to be given up. But the prescription is wrong. So now, Shankaracharya came along and he spoke very vigorously and he established impersonalism. And then Ramavacharya, Madhavacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Balde Vidyabhushan, they all strongly refuted impersonalism. But in the modern times, so medieval spread of Mayavad there. Medieval means that the ancient period is before in the BCs. That's called ancient. And medieval refers especially 5th century, 10th century, 15th century. Then 18th, 19th, 20th century is the modern. So in the medieval period, Mayavad spread a lot and it was countered. But Balde Vidyabhushan wrote his commentary in the 18th century. Around 1750s, he wrote Govinda Bhashya. And at that time, the Christians started taking a strong hold on India. And Christians came first to Bengal. That was the place that they got first. From there, that was their stronghold. And initially when the Christians came, they came strictly for business purposes. But eventually the Christian missionaries came along. And the Christian missionaries came, they started systematic criticism of Vedic culture, of Vedic religion. The Muslims just destroyed temples. Just destroyed temples, burned books in where was that? In Magadha. There's an 11-story library. 11-story library. You know, Magadha and all, there's a big university. They just burned the whole library. In Vijayanagar, there was a big prosperous kingdom. And when Vijayanagar fell, they were so angry that these Hindus have resisted us. We will crush them. So they had those palaces, but they decided we will not live in the palaces, we will burn these palaces. So when they decided to burn the palaces, actually these palaces and temples were so big that they were burning and destroying for 6 months. For 6 months, because they had no bombs at that time. So 6 months they're just breaking. Like, Indra was trying to cut the throat of Rudrasura. 1 year he was working. So what we have now, Hampi. You know Hampi, there's a big deity of Narasimhadev. So there's one part of that deity is desecrated by them. So they wanted to desecrate the whole thing, but they couldn't do it. But the Muslims basically physically attacked and destroyed. And they also didn't consider this what they called as idol worshippers. Idolaters worth debating with. And Hindus also didn't consider them worth debating with. They so degraded. They also think, in that Haridas Thakur also we see, na? That the Chandka says, you were born in the glorious Muslim Dharma. Why have you given that up to take up this low-class Dharma of the idolaters? So, but when the Christians came along, their strategy was more subtle. Of course, in Goa they did Inquisition. Goa, they just, they caught all the Brahmins and they told them, surrender, become converted. If not, they will pull out one nail. And then they will pull out the one hair of the eyebrows. Then they will pull out the eyes. Then they will pull out the genitals. And then they will pull out the heart. Like that, they tortured and killed a lot of people. That was the Inquisition, they called it. But that was not what the mainstream Christian strategy was. That was what the Catholics did. The Protestants were the main people who took over. Because what happened was, England was taken over by the Protestants. John Wellesley was the person who took up Methodist, and he brought Methodism to England. So when they came along, they did not do torture. They systematically criticized the Hindu culture. And especially what happened, earlier we were talking about the Puranas. Now Puranas have a lot of stories. And they took the Puranas and made it their target of attack. What kind of immorality is there? And they says, what kind of your religion? It has no sense of decency, no sense of morality. And practically among all the gods that they could criticize, for them Krishna was the softest target. Krishna's activities can be very easily misunderstood to be immoral. In fact, in 1860, the church brought a court case against Krishna. And they said, this Krishna is such an immoral god, he doesn't deserve worship. And for 10 years in India, Krishna worship was banned. Legally banned. Can you imagine in India? So they criticize Krishna, they criticize Shiva. Because even Shiva's activities are also, they can be misunderstood to be immoral. And then, now the Hindus, they got very angry with this criticism. Their hope was, the Christians' hope was that, by this criticism, the Hindus will convert to Christianity. But the Hindus decided, rather than converting, we will reform our religion. But in the process of reforming, because they were not guided by the Guru Shishya Parampara, so they decided that all that is the cause of criticism in Hinduism will reject that. They said, you are saying that this worship of Krishna, worship of Shiva, this is so low class. Yeah, we also agree it is low class. But that is not the real Hindu truth. The real Hindu truth is, you have to go beyond Krishna. You have to go beyond Shiva. You have to go beyond Devi. You have to go into impersonal oneness. So, these Hindu leaders, they felt that an effective way to counter Christianity would be to portray impersonalism as the unifying truth of Hinduism. And that's why, you see, right, starting from Ram Mohan Roy, Dayanand Saraswati, Ramakrishna, Swami Vivekananda, Aurobindo, Radha Krishna. All of the top people who are considered spiritual thinkers and spiritual leaders in India, all of them were impersonalists. Why? Because they all felt that impersonalism is the feasible way to refute Christianity. And then after almost 100 years of trying to counter Christianity, trying to convince Hindus to reform, the Christians realize Hindus are not going to reform only. So they decided intellectually, they are coming up with newer and newer alternatives. They are coming, so then they decided to forget the intellectual attack and they started focusing on social service. Go to the poor people. Go to the poor people, feed them and convert them. So currently what the churches do is, they tell in America that we are feeding the starving millions of India, please give us charity. And they all do charity. Because who doesn't want to feed the starving millions? But then they give charity only to the starving millions who convert to Christianity, not to others. So seeing this, many of the Hindu leaders felt that, you know, why should these Hindus become Christians? We will do social service and we will keep them within Hinduism. Now, doing social service is not bad. But what they felt is that, actually the social service is better than devotional service. Why? Manav seva hi madhav seva hai. You don't have to build big, big temples and you don't have to worship the deity over there. Feed the hungry people. So now, see, social service is not bad. But when social service is portrayed as a substitute for devotional service, that is a serious mistake. It's a very serious mistake. Why? Because social service may temporarily improve people materially. But it's not going to solve any problem. People still go on in material existence. So what these impersonalists did was, they took, now Shankaracharya's Advaita Vedanta is itself a deviation from the Vedic truth. Mayavadam asat shastram prachannam bauddham uchyate. In the Padma Puran, Lord Shiva is telling Parvati Devi that I will come in Kali Yuga and I will teach this Maya Kalpita Devi Kalau Brahmana Murtina. Maya Kalpita, O Devi, I will take. Kalpita means I will take what? Kalau Brahmana Murtina. I will take the form of Brahmana. What will I do? Mayavadam asat shastram. That false conclusion shastra prachannam bauddham uchyate. It is a covered Buddhism. That's what I will teach. So in that sense, Shankaracharya's Advaita Vedanta itself is a deviation from the Vedic scriptures. But modern Mayavad is a deviation even from Advaita Vedanta. Because Shankaracharya did not do any social service. Shankaracharya, this world is Maya, get out of here. They said, no, this world is Maya, but we should improve it. So that's why Prabhupada said, if this world is Maya, why are you trying to improve it? Get out of it. But you know, they were completely mixed up. Basically, their idea was, as I said, they took the sugar of social service from Christianity. And now God is everywhere, so God is there in everyone's heart. So serve that God, and there is no need to serve the God in the temple. That's a complete mix-up. So, our acharyas are very strongly against, not against social service per se. The service is useful, you can do it. But social service should never be thought of as a substitute for devotional service or as superior to devotional service. So, in modern times, because the Hindu leaders thought that we can refute Christianity, counter Christianity, using the impersonal school of thought, it became popular. And then, because of that, they also felt that all these rituals of Hinduism are not required. We should do practical activity. What is that practical activity? Do social service. So, in this way, the whole Vedic culture and Vedic philosophy got completely messed up. And that's why Prabhupada is so strong in his criticism. So, in the next class, we'll discuss a little bit about the disasters caused by Mayavad. So, I've given a historical perspective. So, I'll summarize what I discussed. I started by talking about the main theme we talked about was where Mayavad goes wrong. So, I talked about the Vedic master plan. So, what is the intermediate truth within the Vedic master plan? You are attracted from impiety to piety, or rather impious materialism to pious materialism, and from that negation of materialism, and from there to true spirituality. So they take that which is the intermediate step within it, and they make that the conclusive step. So that's the main source of impersonalism in that sense is the envy of the Krishna that is there in the heart, and they get that basis for it from the Upanishadic verses which talk about impersonalism. But then on top of that they add what? The spice of nationalism, so the sugar of social service. So then I discussed from the historical perspective how Shankaracharya came and he was refuted by our Vaishnava Acharyas. And in the modern times, there was what they call as Neo-Advaita Vedanta. Neo-Mayavad. So when Prabhupada uses the word Mayavad, he refers to Shankaracharya and he refers to the modern deviants from Shankaracharya also. So for Prabhupada, Mayavad is a big term which includes practically everyone who does not accept a personalistic conclusion. And then we discussed about how the Mayavadi is that which is the conclusion, Puranas are the conclusion of the scripture. They rejected that so that Hinduism would appear more respectable in the while combating with Christians. And all the rituals of bhakti which can give us experience of Krishna, they started saying these are all unnecessary and just do social service. And that's why Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur were so heavy in condemning social service, especially if it is portrayed as a substitute to or as superior to devotional service. So thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki Gaur Bhaktivinda ki Nitai Gaur Premanande.
This PPT is there.
Yeah, this is actually, I took a series of classes on Ishopanishad, the whole Ishopanishad I took for the Bhakti Shastri batch. So this is from